CliffCentral.com.
Yep. Ain't that the truth? Razor Light and America.
Is this a classic that I didn't know about?
No, it's...
No, a great British brand, by the way.
Yeah, they're... You told me a story about them. Yeah, you watched them perform live and all the rest of it. So Razorlight, this, what I love about that song is the lyric. It goes, "All my life there's panic in America. All my life there's chaos in America." And ain't that the truth? I mean, if we lived 20 years ago, the panic would have been Iran-Contra or something like that. If we'd lived 30 years ago, it would have been Watergate. If we'd lived 40 years ago, it would have been Kennedy and the assassination or Vietnam or one of those things. There's always panic in America. There's always something going on in America that we all have to care about. Because why? Because they dominate the culture so much. That's why. And for good or for bad, we're all wrapped up in their crazy. So this week it's Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Donald Trump is out. And that's the panic in America that we're going through now.
Yep.
So get ready. There's going to be more where that came from.
You know, the light of my morning came from First Lady Melania Trump's final.
You love her, message. Don't you? You love her.
I do. just annoyed that I saw it a little too close to the show starting. So I only saw a couple of seconds before six. During the song break, I got sucked in. All 6-odd minutes of it.
Yeah.
She looked very presidential behind her, a lectern covered up to her neck. No boobage. No. She's the first lady. And she hardly made a mention of the president. And I thought that was a smart move.
Well, a lot of people are saying, they've been saying this since before he even became president. She's going to leave him. She's definitely going to leave him. I don't see how that's going to happen. She's on to a good thing here. She probably doesn't even have that much sex with him anymore. So that's the most unpleasant part of her job. Doesn't have to worry anymore about that. She gets to spend a huge amount of money. What a life. I don't think she wants to. Why would she want to leave him?
But also, hand swatting aside, where do we get this notion that they're having a horrible marriage and whatnot? How do we know that? We
Please. If you know the same people
imposing what they want to see happen.
Here's the problem. The same people who get upset when you say, "How do you know anything about Melania and Donald's relationship?" Because they think they know. They're the same people who will like lose their shit with you if you suggest that Michelle Obama has manly shoulders. You know, they'll get really fucking, like, it's just not funny when you say that. But for them to say that, oh, they definitely have inside knowledge that Melania and Donald are not talking or they're not sleeping together. You're like, how do you know? How do you know?
I don't get that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know. Who the hell are you? What, do you have special inside info on their bedroom behavior? I heard something funny yesterday. Apparently, when the president and the first lady need some alone time, under any of the last couple of administrations, this is how they say it. They say POTUS and, or they have code names, different code names for them. So for Donald Trump, it's something with a P. I can't remember what it was. But POTUS and the First Lady are discussing the Bosnian problem. That means that they're busy. They're having some private time. Yeah, so you can't disturb them. So when the Secret Service, someone approaches them and like, we need to speak to the president right now. They're like, no, they're discussing the Bosnian problem. Which means they're either having sex or arguing or doing whatever couples do, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
No, I'm sorry. We can't let you in right now. They're discussing the Bosnian problem. You know?
What we do know for certain about their marriage is the fact that, and this is because Trump himself said it a couple of years ago, out of fun, I just watched and listened to this interview again during our break. Trump on Howard Stern years ago, and he said, yeah, I've never heard her fart, nor do I know that she's ever taken a dookie or something. I'm like, why do you have to tell us that? And then she said in a later interview, that's been the secret to their successful marriage.
Listen, I know couples who've said the same thing. So this is not new. And let's not credit Melania and Donald with discovering the key to a happy marriage, because how do we know they're happy? But I know couples where they have insisted, the wife and the husband have both insisted that they have separate lavatories. So in other words, you could have the same dressing room, you could share the same bedroom, but you need a separate loo. You can even share the same shower and bathroom, but your actual loo needs to be separate from the other person's, and they need to be kind of accessed from different places and so on. Because that's just the day your relationship gets to the point where you're comfortable shaving while she's peeing, or worse, or you're busy taking a dump and she has to be brushing her teeth. That's the magic is gone. That's where every ounce of magic and mystery has been removed from the relationship. And some people will say, oh, well, that's honesty. That's how you know that you're really comfortable with each other. I think that means the thrill has gone.
Nonsense.
100%. I
never need to know anyone on earth well enough to be comfortable walking in on them while they are doing their business. There is no way in the conceivable universe that I'll ever be okay with that.
I would even take it one step further. My dream has always been to meet somebody who looks like Gabriel Union or Scarlett Johansson, who's willing to be in a relationship in the same house, but we only share the kitchen. So at night,
right,
you go and sleep that side. Yes. I sleep in my room. That's truly my dream. Yeah, well, like I need to meet
Bolelo. That's not so weird. That's not so weird. I mean, the upper classes in Europe have always done that. The man and the woman have had separate bedrooms, and obviously there'll be conjugal visits from time to time, but the woman has her wing or her apartments. He has his apartments. I mean, famously, the king and the queen and Prince Philip have never actually shared a bedroom. They have separate apartments and have always in Buckingham Palace, Windsor Castle, Balmoral, the lot. They all have their own separate apartments, and then they get together the rest of the time.
It's the way to do it.
And I'll tell you what they definitely don't share is a bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that makes a difference. And I'm a huge supporter and believer in that. Do not share a bathroom if you can. And so is my sister. And I'll never forget once she went on holiday with a boyfriend. And she called me and I could tell that she was out of breath. And I said, what's going on? And there was like thumping in the background as well. She goes, I need to run. And I'm like, where are you running? She goes, just running downstairs. I'm going to the loo because I need to take a crap. He's still in the shower, so I need to come back up.
Well, you know,
he notices I've left.
Anybody who's ever been to my house will tell you that there is famously in the bathroom downstairs, the guest bathroom, the one that's used when there are people visiting, is a sign that says strictly no pooing. Right? That's been there from the day I moved in here. If you want to do that stuff, you have to either be staying, in which case you can have permission to use one of the spare bedroom bathrooms upstairs, or else you must go home. You're not doing that in my house. There's no need. Like, what, have you got such poor control of your digestive system that you don't know that you're going to come to visit me and you're going to need to take a dump? Go home. I don't need you there that much. There's no social event that I'm so insistent on your being present at that you can come and abuse my bathroom like that.
Have you ever had people get upset with that? Because do you know these types of people that come to your house and get upset at your rules? I've never understood that. Like,
I've had people. Look, I only have there are three rules in my house. The rest of the time, you do whatever you want. If I've invited you, I expect you to be happy and comfortable and do whatever you like. You can eat and drink as you wish. Mm-hmm. You can stay the night during curfew if you need to, because there is a spare room. But don't abuse these three rules. The first rule is strictly no pooing, because I don't think that's necessary. You shouldn't be doing that in other people's houses. You should plan ahead. Plan ahead. Take the necessary precautions at your own house. So that's number one. Number two is I don't like having obese people in my house. They break things without realizing. They turn around in a hurry, and because they're enormous, they knock things over and then they break stuff.
Fair.
And they take up an enormous amount of space, and I don't like feeling crowded. So I have a rule about fat people. There have been fat people. On rare occasions, I've made exceptions, but normally that's a rule.
Very rare.
And the third rule is no communists, because they have no respect for property, and they'll steal things. I mean, communists have no respect for property, so they will walk around your house and help themselves to whatever they want, and they'll disappear with your things. And we know this because part of communism is that property rights should not exist. Everything should belong to everybody. So I've spent an enormous amount of time collecting things that I care about. Some of them are precious and valuable, and some of them are not, but they're valuable to me. I'm not going to have a communist come in here and help themselves to whatever they want just because they don't respect property rights. So those are my three rules. If you can follow those three rules, you're welcome to stay in my house.
Very fair. Very, in particular, of all of those, number three made me laugh, but number two is completely that there should be no absolute problems with that. Those are wonderful.
Well, rules, yeah. I mean, listen, you could call it discrimination, and many people have. You could say, well, you know, you're not allowed to have your own kind of fat apartheid in your house, but frankly, I reserve the right of admission to the people that I choose, and if you don't like that, then so what? You don't have to be admitted. Go and play with other children.
You're a dickhead if you don't like it, because go home. You know, there's so few places where we can make our own rules. If you want to come to my house, hit the gym. I like it, Gareth. Yeah. It's your house. People mustn't tell you what to do.
Otherwise, go have something at your house.
Yeah. Thank you.
Then you can invite all the biggest, fattest people you know, and they can all get together and break your stuff together.
And you can all collectively take a dump together.
Right, exactly. I mean, how lovely. Doesn't that just sound like the perfect party? Because now suddenly I'm ready to have those mm-hmm. people around in my house, shitting and breaking things.
Just heavy breathing.
Yeah. So yeah, wonderful. Just you know, there is that group, though, the group of people who think it's such a normal body function, so why feel any shame with mm-hmm. it? So they just don't understand what we're talking about at all right now.
Listen to this. Snae says, oh my God, at the beginning of lockdown, I opened a case against a security guard that tried to break into my house. The investigating officer came to my house to take my boyfriend's statement. Her partner asked to use my bathroom. That man was in the loo for 20 minutes. I was so mad. I think it's rude to poo in someone's house if you are not staying there. It is disgusting, especially for a cop. Snae, I couldn't agree more.
Oh. And I also note the fact that we are products of our environment. And just growing up, my parents' bathroom was off limits. Because it was just the kids were not allowed there.
Right.
Could go anywhere else. But the guest loo downstairs, ideally don't use that. And then just my parents' bathroom is a no-go.
Same for
as
me.
Well, you know, you touch
don't use
my parents' expensive things, you just don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Brandon says, it is tough for people like me who have irritable bowel syndrome. There's very little warning. My stomach lets me know when it's almost too late. I had to get over the embarrassment of shitting a long time ago. Well, that's good for you, Brandon, but I haven't invited you to my house, and that's not going to happen. Yeah, you got to disclose. I send out a form, and then you fill in irritable bowel syndrome, and then sorry, you're cancelled.
And part of my ignorance with IBS is: are there certain triggers that you know?
I don't want to know
okay,
about.
I can't eat this.
I don't want to talk about irritable bowel syndrome. We do have something to.
Well, because we. Oh, sorry. Talking about eating, I have some feedback though.
Yes.
On the one thing for the week, I took part in that assignment.
I was meant to do another one this morning. I didn't do the one thing for a week. We'll have to save it for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Sorry. So which one did you do?
I picked something to eat.
That you hadn't eaten before? What was it?
Yeah. I'm sorry. It was going to... Yeah, I just couldn't do anything else. So I sort of remained in what I could stomach, and that was artichoke. I had not had that before.
You didn't like it?
I don't think I'm better for having tried it. See, I should stay in my
Okay.
comfort zone. Screw this.
But there's a whole like ritual with artichoke, with the lemon butter and the way you eat it and everything else. Hey, you didn't find that interesting? I would have thought that would be something that you'd be keen to know. You know, Sia wants to be able to sit at the dinner table with the queen one day and know how to eat anything. And what if she serves you artichokes?
And I actually had it in an omelet to disguise what I would have. Yeah, there was some omelet, there was some artichoke and a whole bunch of stuff. And I could still just taste that there's something weird in it that I'm not used to. So
okay.
I tried.
What was yours, Mbulelo?
So one of our listeners said I have to try impala liver, which was an interesting
thing. Okay, yes. We got a message about that earlier this morning. So how was impala liver?
Listen, I hate liver so much. I just want to give it some context. As a black person, Gareth, I must tell you, I don't know if you know any of your friends who gizzards and liver, you have to be able to eat it. Since I was young, my mom used to put that stuff on the table. I literally, as a youngster, used to hit the plate off the table. So I cannot stand liver of any kind.
I don't like that either. So how was it? Did you force yourself?
No, I did. It was because it cost me an arm and leg, first of all. I did not realize how much it would cost. But I have a friend who, I'm very fortunate, a friend of mine owns a game farm. So he actually happened to have some in his freezer. I bought it and it was, and he came and prepared it for me. So it was prepared as well as it could. Like, he's a top-notch cook. Oh my God, it was awful.
Yeah.
It was awful, but I powered through and I finished the whole thing. So
I'm not a fan of liver. Even chicken livers I can't eat. I'm not a big fan of that. So all right, but well done to both of you for doing the one thing for the week. Now, I forgot to do that at 6:25 this morning, so I owe you one. I'll do it tomorrow. But on that note, because we spoke about why some people are so picky when it comes to food. Remember, we had that whole thing with Sia the other day where we went through and we posted a video on our Instagram, by the way, where you can actually see Sia doing his thing. And it is outrageous.
Unbelievable.
I mean, in case
both of your opinions,
in case you thought we were just exaggerating. You have to see this video to believe it. Sia is on fire. This poor waitress wants to kill herself, and he's busy ordering things and changing this and changing that. And can this be chopped instead of grated and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, go and look at it because it's on our Gareth Cliff Show Instagram, and you can't believe someone would behave like this in a restaurant. It's so bad. Anyway, we got this email, which is on the same subject. And I think this might resonate with a few people. It's from Tato, who listens to us. He says, I'm listening to the podcast from this morning, and sometimes it's worth understanding a bit more about why some people are picky when it comes to food. Growing up, I had a lot of allergies, and thank God I've outgrown some of them with the effects of those allergies. I'm allergic to egg, wheat, dairy, nuts, seafood, soy, grass, and pollen. Now, those are the more normal allergies. Then it gets ridiculous because I'm also allergic to beans, pears, apples, bananas, avocado, watermelon, kiwi, strawberry, peaches, lychee, tree bark, dust, and cockroaches. Some of these allergies sound ridiculous, and I've had countless arguments with people about how I could be generally allergic to seafood, etc. But when I was younger, I would literally just walk past the ocean basket and my face would swell up, or someone would notice that my one ear was getting bigger. It was based on what kind of seafood was most prevalent in the air. If there are even a few granules of nuts in something, my lip immediately swells after the first bite. And if I happen to not notice and actually swallow the thing, then I have to be rushed to the ER. And some allergies are based on how the food is prepared. So, for example, I can't eat fresh fruit. If someone had to make me a strawberry milkshake from fresh strawberries, my throat starts closing up. But if you had to make a fresh strawberry syrup, then when you make them, nothing happens. And you know how juices say that they have apple or pear or grape? Well, let's just say I can always tell if the carton has apple or pear. Point being, people are not picky because they want to be, but because their lives depend on it. I've ruled one out because Mother Nature has been trying to get rid of me, but I always come back. Happy Friday. That's from Tato. Well, it's not Friday now, but Tato, your point is taken. I see Mbulela's already shaking his head. He has no time for your weakness.
Yeah, I mean, Tato, it's been good, Chief, but sometimes maybe this wasn't the life for you. What the hell?
He's allergic to everything.
who's he going to be a partner with? I'm not saying you're not lovable, but my God, could you imagine being in a relationship with this person? Could you imagine being the mother of such a human?
Oh my God, having to raise...
Mother Nature is really trying to get rid of you, hey? You can't even go outside. There was allergic to tree bark there, allergic to
dust,
grass.
Dust.
Allergic to dust.
Cockroaches. Mm-hmm. I heard cockroach.
Mm-hmm.
Dust.
How do you even find that out?
You can't help that.
Yeah. Tato, we're thrilled that you're here to share this this last show with us, but it's been fun, dude. It's been fun.
Hamburg at them corn.
Yo, askies, Tato. Yes. You are not living the
shout out to your mom.
Well, Carl says, my wife's mouth also swells when I put my nuts in it.
Carl, man.
Just
win a car.
Yeah. How's that?
And, you know, over the weekend, this is where I tasted artichoke when I went to have lunch with friends of mine. I had a friend there who just doesn't care. No, she just doesn't care about what I'm doing or what I complain about, because we were at this, it was after a hike. So there were some animals, actually, that were roaming around.
Animals.
Including, there were even some zebras, literally just roaming around on this piece of land. And so I go on this whole thing about, you know, I'm trying something new, artichoke, and I'm just going to, you know, I think we should all be responsible eaters. And I can tell that her gaze is just moving away from me and looking towards the zebra. And she says, you know, wonder if we could order some zebra today. I'm like, hey.
But there are people
spoke about responsible eating, and you're like, actually, screw that. Let's get some zebra to eat.
There are people who are allergic to as many things as Tato is. I don't know how they get through the day, because you know, a lot of stuff. If I think about what food, and I make very little food because I'm not a great cook. But if I think about how I just cut shit up on a cutting board, and if I were allergic to, say, nuts, then you can't keep nuts with anything else. So if someone, you know, is chopping up a salad and they decide to put some walnuts in it or whatever, then suddenly you have to be rushed to the hospital. It must be terrifying to have to live like that. Terrifying.
Yo, geez, which is why I think all manufacturers always have to say if your factory has any sort of mix with nuts or nuts are produced at the place. I know that's one, but I don't understand how they live. How do they make it to age 28? This is unbelievable to me.
While we're following up on stuff that we've discussed before, it's just amazing what stuff people respond to. We talked last week, Sia brought up he's not sure about sharpening kitchen knives. I don't know about you guys, but Sia, you must have also. I've been inundated with emails and messages from people who have advice for you on knives. I swear to God, I even got people whose family make knives, people who are expert knife makers, who are chefs, professional chefs. Everybody seemingly, you know, it's amazing. We'll talk about something ubiquitous like internet connections or ESCOM or whatever. Won't get much of a response. You talk about sharpening knives, and suddenly it's the most exciting topic in the world. And we get like 50 emails from people all about this. So here's one from Reno, who says, I'm listening to this morning's show and the knife topic came up for the second day in a row. Forget all that unnecessary knife sharpening crap. All you need is an upside down coffee mug. The complicated process is as follows. Pull the one edge of the knife down along the rind of the coffee mug. Repeat for the other side of the blade. That is it. It works like a charm. That's how simple it is, according to Reno. So try that with your blunt knives, Sia, and let's see what happens. Turn a coffee mug upside down and just run it along that edge. That would be, I mean, if that does work, and I have no reason to disbelieve Reno, then that's terrific. How awesome is that?
Okay.
Cool.
Give it a try.
Some useful
information. I don't know as well now. A pair of scissors that I have, it's also blunt, so I just feel like the world is conspiring against me.
Maybe you
right
can
now,
do it
Stuart.
With maybe you can also do it with scissors, you know, with a pair of scissors.
Yeah,
that might work.
So.
All right.
Okay. Do you guys want some crazy news stories?
Bring it on. Let's go.
Well, I say crazy, but I actually admire this man a little.
Mm-hmm.
A 33-year-old Californian man who was scared to go home because of COVID has been living undetected in Chicago's O'Hare Airport for 3 months. And I think this is actually genius.
But can I ask you something? If you are so afraid of COVID that you're not going to go home, what kinds of situations are you getting yourself into when you're not at home that could make COVID even worse? I mean, we were talking about bathrooms just now. It's not sanitary. It is not a sensible thing to be using an airport bathroom for 3 months. What is wrong with this person?
But think about it.
How bad is their house that they'd rather be in the airport than at their house? I mean, I am allergic to airports. Like, Tato's allergic to everything. If I spend more than half an hour in an airport, if I absolutely have to be waiting for, you know, outside of boarding time and all of that stuff, I start to get like really antsy. It doesn't matter whether you're in the slow lounge or the first class lounge or whatever it is, you're still in a public place. There's still a whole lot of people. If you are worried about COVID, the last place you want to be is an airport. This person's clearly stupid.
Who is this person that they can stay away from real life for 3 months and not have to work and clearly, still have a life?
They're not a serious person.
I say I also admire just the fact that he went 3 months undetected. So his name is Aditya Singh. He's 33 years old. He was arrested this past Saturday morning in Chicago, and he was charged with impersonation in a restricted area of the airport. I'll explain later why he was charged with that, and theft of less than $500. So he landed at Chicago's O'Hare Airport back in October, October the 19th. And he allegedly lived in the airport security zone until he was arrested a couple of days ago. So that's why he was charged with impersonation, because when he was first confronted, people were like, actually, wait a minute. Yes, you've been here for a while, but you aren't part of security. And he goes, no. Here's my badge. And this is a security badge that he had stole from someone else. But for 3 whole months, living, chilling, washing himself in the airport, he claims that actually he would chat to some passengers who are moving through and they would provide him with food. But he said no, he was actually just scared to leave the actual airport building because of COVID.
Stupid idiot. Instead, he's probably getting more exposure to COVID in airport than anywhere else. What a douchebag. Trying to cover it up by saying he's friendly with people who are walking through there. But where are you going to? Can you give me some free food? Fucking sponge.
I know.
This earth is so full. Silly. This earth is so full of useless organisms. Really, this is a useless organism. This person should be embarrassed. Instead, they're a news story.
He has no previous criminal record, and now he's going to get one because, well, he's just silly.
Dummy.
He paid a bail of $1,000, and he's going to go back to court on the 27th of Jan. And mind you, though, O'Hare Airport in Chicago is one of the busiest airports in the world. Pre-COVID, they used to have about 84.6 million visitors per year. So why he thought that was safe, I don't know.
But that's the point. He didn't think it was safe. He's probably just a sponger. He's just some lazy, useless sack of shit who thinks that he should be given free food by people he doesn't know. And that's precisely what's happening here. He's just a parasite. He's living off other people, and the airport's a great place for him to schmuckle food off of people. That's what he's doing. So he's just a lazy, useless person. I mean, like Mbulelo says, what kind of serious person can take off 3 months to stay in an airport and then blame COVID? He didn't care about COVID.
No, it's crazy. But if it took 3 months to find this joker, what if the guy was a terrorist, is what I'm worrying. How bad is the airport security?
Good point.
Excellent point. Stupid. This is just stupid. So I want to know what's been happening in sport during lockdown, Bulelo, because I haven't got an update from you for some time now.
I was reading this really interesting article about the businesses that have shown themselves to be sort of what they call, it's another douchebag business word, is future-proofed. I'm sure we hear this all the time in marketing. But they were talking about tech, obviously, and Bezos and why they did so much better. And the other, the other two businesses that they mentioned were the NFL and the NBA. Whether you like them or not, ratings up or down, is what's incredible is they managed to keep their product and not lose their TV contract, which was just unbelievable, and finish both products not in bubbles. And I thought, you know, this is testament, and especially for me as a sports fan, why it makes me so sad that our sport is so amateur, because it's run by a bunch of jokers, is this is what happens when you have serious people, Roger Goodell and Adam Silver, that are business people that go, this is a product, we are going to protect it. And it's been incredible. All other businesses have been affected except sport, I think, and tech and Bezos. And I think one has to say, whether you like sport or not, that there's something to take from these guys. And this is a resilient business.
They're incredible businessmen. I mean, these people, that's why they're so wealthy. You know, no one has become hugely wealthy unless they were corrupt from South African sport. Yeah. And I mean, like massive, you know, like hundreds of millions. There's no one in South African sport that's become that kind of wealthy. No one. And it's because they're all such small scale subsistence farmer type people. They're not big thinkers. They really
not. All of it.
Yeah.
But my last point was this, was, you know, the one guy I really admire, because I'm big on the return of the alpha, whether male or female. I love alpha females and alpha females. And there's a guy called Roger Goodell. He's the NFL guy. And people for years saying, why does this guy earn $20 million? And I've always had this thinking, and I've run into friends that lean more left even more than I do. Mm-hmm. And I always say, listen, guys, CEOs and the top people, these $200 million, $20 million salaries, it's not for when things are going well. It's like in the army, they say a general doesn't get his badges for when times are going well. This is when they pay Roger Goodell the $20 million for. Mm. So you in middle management, who always crumbles when the pressure comes, now when a coronavirus pandemic shut the whole world down, Roger Goodell to work, this is why he earns $20 million. Not for when things are going well. Anyone is a great leader. We've seen with politicians
in good times,
times are great.
So
but when Roger Goodell was facing fire, and I just think it's admirable, and I love being a sports fan, and I really admire these businesses, and I really want to learn from them.
Well, Tracy says to our point about South African sports people, she says our golfers are doing pretty well. Yeah, but that's because our golfers don't need a South African golf organization to be taking half their money and doing nothing with it. I mean, all the organized sports, rugby, cricket, soccer, hockey, you know, all those, they need the South African Olympic Committee with SASCOC, all of those people who run those different things, the administrators are the problem. That's what Mbulelo is saying. Those golfers go out and they do it on their own. It's them, maybe sometimes them and their caddy. That's it.
I've always said this, and I say it on the sports show often, is that if you want to know how amateur a sport is, if the international level is the highest level of that sport, it's amateur. When you look at the great leagues, it's the Premier League, NFL, NBA, all owned by billionaires. They create a product, they protect that product, and they have a commissioner. Simple model, and we go. We don't want to hear about, because the difference between businessmen and politicians and cadres is that rulemakers, is their immediate thing is hold it back. Billionaires want to drive things forward, and you can pull us back. So there's a reason why South Africa has fallen apart, because we've got politicians trying to run a product. They've never raised $10 billion, so they have no idea how to scale things and make it marketable.
You are sounding less and less like a lefty every single day. I like it.
No,
Steph says, maybe I'm not a real sports fan, but I find it boring without fans in the stands.
That's a good point. Listen, the NFL was back this weekend. Just again, incredible product. They had, I think, about 10% capacity fans. I also thought, you know what, they've all done a great job, but it's what they call the playoffs in American football. The fans were back in the stands, and it is a game changer. You know, when you see it, it's just awesome. It takes it to another level. So as cool as they've been with the fake fans, having the real thing and the atmosphere, and even the players, you hear them in the interviews. They said, it's another level. So we do need fans. It does make the product better, you know? So,
well, to our earlier point, Carl says, you ask who can take 3 months off to hide out in an airport. Well, you saw that the public protector is taking a 2.5 month sabbatical. So that's probably paid. Good so point, that, that's not a serious person either. Absolutely. Let's draw that distinction.
Mbulelo, have you watched or interested in watching the new Tiger documentary?
Great things about it. It's phenomenal. I've seen episode one, and Tiger's my guy. I think he's the greatest sportsman of all time. There is no competition.
Can I, on that matter of Tiger Woods, someone sent me this, and I thought it was really a good point. Okay, this is someone on Twitter, and I got a screenshot of it, got sent to me yesterday. And tell me if you agree. It is truly heartbreaking to know that Tiger Woods could have hit Michael Jordan levels of greatness, but Tiger's wife ruined his life and career.
I don't believe that he didn't reach that greatness.
I think he could have, but his reputation did take a serious knock. You remember he dropped all his sponsorships, dropped him. His life went into a complete free fall for a long time there when he went through that divorce. And he was, you know, he was cheating on old, what's his name? What is her name?
Elin
Nordgren. That's it.
Yeah.
So he cheated on her. And remember, she took a golf club to his car, and there was that embarrassing situation inside the estate that they lived in where she came out and she was attacking him with a golf club. And I mean, I'm going to read that again and tell me if you disagree, because we often say, you know, the power behind the throne. If we find a man who has a great supportive wife and or vice versa, we find a woman who has a great supportive husband and they achieve great things. I'm going to read this again. Tell me if you really and truly can find a reason to disagree. It's truly heartbreaking to know that Tiger Woods could have hit Michael Jordan's levels of greatness, but Tiger's wife ruined his life and career. For a while, she did. That's indisputable.
I do agree, but I mean, he's already transcended Michael Jordan, so I don't know who that person is that said that.
I think it's a good point.
Yeah, I've never understood why young sportsmen get married. I've never understood it. Before you're 30, you know, I had a taste of it when I was a youngster. And trust me, it's another world. You know, when people get all sanctimonious about, oh, I can't believe what Tiger did. Listen here, sweet cheeks.
This is my whole point, that we often will give a partner credit for helping build a great person's career or life. Right? Mm-hmm. And rightly so, because the partner's maybe looking after the kids. Maybe they're there as the support when they get home after a rough day. We often credit, even in business, not just in sport, that unless there is someone looking after all the other stuff, the business person can't truly do what they need to do. But then we must also stop giving credit to people who are ruining their husband or wife's lives by not supporting them.
Well, my two cents, though, is I think the fact that Tiger is the Michael Jordan of golf, if he hasn't surpassed that, simply because Mbulelo, correct me if I'm wrong here, isn't the big thing with him his comeback over the past few years? The fact that he took a pause, all of this was happening in his life, he had the focus, the determination, the discipline, and still has now come back and continues to rise. Isn't that the big thing?
First billionaire sportsman to ever be, first man to ever be paid purely for his sport. Forget $1 billion, right? To generate that, he became a billionaire, first ever to be that. So Tiger Woods, and then he was already great before this. But of course, the comeback's unbelievable. He was, you know, he's supposed to be dead, but you know.
Well, I knew this was going to happen. So Lindsay has said Tiger ruined his own life and career. His wife stayed home looking after their kids while he traveled the world banging every model he could. He lost his focus. So there's Lindsay. Linda says, sorry, he decided to get married. I don't think anyone forced him to get married. If he wanted to whore around, then he shouldn't have gotten married in the first place. So this is what I was talking about. That's why I read that. It was purely provocative. I didn't say I agreed or disagreed. I was just looking for trouble. And guess what?
Predictably, you got it.
It was like I set the trap and the bear walked straight into the trap after I'd set it. It was just great. So Linda and Lindsay, give yourselves a pat on the back for falling for my trap straight away. Yes,
as well,
some
though,
women do not, you know, women do not like hearing that shit. That's why I read it, because I just knew there was going to be some woman, and maybe, you know, it's because they've gone through something similar. Someone was going to lose their mind about that. And two women here on our chat this morning clearly got straight into it.
Yeah. No, you know, you got him.
And I think the when it comes to personalities, if we do still make that Jordan or Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods comparison, Michael Jordan, you can tell, is out there. He loves being, he loves the attention. He loves, you know, crowds and fans and whatnot. But Tiger, even from the outside, you can tell that he's never truly been comfortable with fame. It's never really been his thing. I remember one interview that years ago where they were going down the track of speaking about fame, and he just says, well, the only place that I can go where I'm not recognized is underwater. But, oh,
yeah.
Well, Mr. Woods.
That's a big deal.
His father. His father famously, I mean, he'll be uncomfortable with a military man, and his dad was not about that. Him being out there, his dad did not love, because I mean, he's been grooming Tiger since Tiger was 4 years old. By the way,
didn't the old man Tiger, died like 10 years ago or whatever,
and it broke Tiger. That was when everything spiraled. Yeah, because when his dad went, just like the Williams twins, you know, when the father went, that authority that they were looking for, that affirmation is kind of what some people are saying was gone. And that's when Tiger changed. Everything changed and he spiraled out of control.
Even May on the- I say very randomly, for years, I thought Tiger Woods' dad was James Earl Jones. I've got my blacks confused.
Let me tell you something. James Earl Jones, I think he's 99 years old.
No, Betty White is 99. I think
let's talk about these old people. Let's talk about these people.
They both had their birthdays a couple of days ago.
James Earl Jones is 90 years old right now. And Betty White is 99 years old.
99!
These two prove that age is just a number. I mean, James Earl Jones, he's still working. He's still working at 90. That is amazing. Betty White is still acting. She's still working at 99 years old.
And you know, sharp.
You realize Betty White knew Doris Day.
My God.
That's how old she is. David Attenborough is another one, Tracy points out. Quite right. There's a legend. He's 93, David Attenborough.
Now that I make the recent comparison, Betty White is older than Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah.
And Anne Frank. So Martin Luther King Jr. would have been 92, and so would have Anne Frank this year. Betty White, 99 years old. She saw all of that.
Yeah.
She just missed the prohibition. That's how old
she read about Anne Frank probably in her newspaper.
James Earl Jones's birthday was 2 days ago and Betty White's was yesterday. I saw the funniest thing. They've got, you know, I follow Ryan Reynolds, who's hilarious, and he and Sandra Bullock were filming some movie with Betty White. And The Proposal. So he got her to do this funny thing with them where he was sitting with Sandra Bullock, and the two of them are busy talking, and he goes, you know, I noticed Betty White's really nice to you, and she hasn't even spoken to me. I think she's a bit of a cunt. So Betty White comes up to Sandra Bullock and hugs her and goes, oh, honey, you're America's sweetheart. Everybody loves you. Gives a big hug. And then he kind of waves at her and she ignores him. And then later on, she comes and sits down and she says to him, could you give me a coffee, please, honey? So he goes, I'm not your assistant, Betty. I'm actually starring in this movie with you. She goes, oh, that's very sweet, honey. I don't even know your name. So he goes, look, Betty, I'm Ryan, because she called him Brian. She's like, I'm Ryan, and you've really been horrible to me. And I was just saying, you know, you try to convince people that you're this sweet old lady, but you're actually an old bitch. He goes, why don't you go, Betty White, and suck some hot cock? So Betty White gets off the chair and she looks at him and she's like, She walks over to Sandra Bullock and now he's shouting at her. He's like, they are not as nice as people think you are, Betty White. And she goes, oh, and like Sandra Bullock is hugging her and saying, how could you say that, Ryan? You're so mean to her. She's such just a sweet old lady. And she gives him like the middle finger while nobody's looking. And he's like, you see? And she did this so beautifully. She's got such a great sense of humor, that Betty White. I do love her.
That's awesome.
God bless her.
Clint Eastwood is also 90 years old.
He had a baby at 81.
Jesus.
81.
Really? 81?
He had a baby at 81.
Wow, man. Terrific.
So he won on the Lego stage.
Oh. I think that's amazing. That's what I want to do. Why do you want to waste your whole life while you're healthy and young, having to raise children. Let someone else raise the children. You can be around, but you don't need to do the Lego or any of that stuff. You can employ someone to do it, and you can have enjoyed your life. I'm going to do that. I'm going to have a kid at 80.
No, Gareth.
Yes, I'm telling you.
80, so his kid is 9 years old. Yep. Regardless of how big a mansion you might have, they still go through that Lego phase. He's just trying to make it to the kitchen to have his soft dinner of mash and gravy.
This is something I... There's something I meant to read you the other day, and I'm going to read it now. It's something my brother sent me, and he's a father. Okay, listen to this. This is great. This was in the Naples Daily News in 2017, and it's still good. Okay? By a guy called John Rosemond. I recently asked a married couple who have three kids, none of whom yet are teens, who are the most important people in your family? Like all good moms and dads of this brave new millennium, they answered our kids. Why? I asked them. What is it about your kids that gives them that status? And like all good moms and dads, they couldn't answer the question other than to fumble with appeals to emotion. So I answered the question for them. There is no reasonable thing that gives your children that status. I went on to point out that many, if not most, of the problems that they're having with their kids, typical stuff these days, is the result of treating their children as if they, their marriage, and their family exist because of the kids, when in fact it is the other way around. The kids exist because of them and their marriage, and thrive because they have created a stable family. Furthermore, without them, their kids wouldn't eat well, have the nice clothing they wear, live in a nice home in which they live, enjoy the great vacations they enjoy, and so on. Instead of lives that are relatively carefree, despite the drama that drama to the contrary they occasionally manufacture, their children would be living lives full of worry and want. This issue is really at the heart of the matter. People my age, and he's an older guy, know that it's the heart of the matter because when we were kids, it was clear to us that our parents were the most important people in our families. And right there, that is why we respected our parents. And that's why we looked up to adults in general. Yes, Virginia, once upon a time in the United States of America, children were second-class citizens to their advantage. It was also clear to us, I speak, of course, in general terms, that our parents' marriages were more important to them than their relationship with us. Therefore, we did not sleep in their beds or interrupt their conversations. The family meal at home was regarded as more important than after-school activities. Mom and Dad talked more, a lot more, with each other than they talked with us. For the lack of pedestals, we emancipated earlier and much more successfully than children have since. The most important person in the army is the general. The most important person in the corporation is the CEO. The most important person in a classroom is the teacher, and the most important person in a family are the parents. The most important thing about children is the need to prepare them properly for responsible citizenship. The primary objective should not be raising straight-A students who excel at three sports, earn a spot in the Olympic swim team, go to an A-list university, become a prominent brain surgeon. The primary objective is to raise a child such that community and culture are strengthened by them. Our child is the most important person in our family is the first step towards raising a child who feels entitled. You don't want that. Unbeknownst to your child, they don't need that. And neither does the world. How's that?
And amen.
And this guy is a family psychologist. He has a website, John Rosemond, johnrosemond.com. And you can go and see more of his work there. But I'm sick to death of hearing from parents that the most important person in their lives is their children, or that their children are so special that they've got to sacrifice everything for their children. And when you hear people talking like that, they're actually wrong. And this article proves it. I just loved that. And I thought, I was meant to share it with you like 2 weeks ago, and I just totally forgot. But there it is.
God, from God's words, God's mouth to my ears. That was one of the most wonderful things I've ever heard. Oh, absolutely.
The next time you meet a parent who says the most important person in our lives is our children, then give them that to read. That's why we've got so many entitled little fuckwits running around, ruining the earth.
Soft little suburban bitches is what I'm starting to call them. Especially since I've been back in Germany.
I disagree. Bitches.
Well, you don't have children.
I disagree. Hey.
Yeah, why do you disagree?
I think, you know, the spoiled brats and entitled kids are in the minority in our society.
You think?
And yeah, otherwise we would be completely off and coexisting way differently. I really think they're in the minority. And part what I think helps and works with having parents who prioritize you and raise you up and, you know, make you feel special is the fact that at least you have a strong foundation at home where you are built up, because you are going to go out into the world where people will just pull you down and drag you for no reason at all.
No, but this is what the person's saying. This guy is saying exactly that, but he's saying you're reading it the wrong way around. Like, unless the parents keep their relationship together and prioritize themselves, they're not in a position to make the children better.
Yeah, it's like you can't pour from an empty cup. Like I just said, these soft little, you know, I'm biased to it. Sia, you said something beautiful earlier, is we're product of our environments. So my dad, because again, I'm biased to what I know, is he was so unbelievably strict and preparing you to be an adult from like six, right? Resonates with me.
Did your father like shake your head?
But don't you see this is why Mbulelo is not a drain on society?
Yeah,
but I'm not a drain on society.
No, you're not either. No, you're not either.
I had an opposite childhood.
No, but I mean, it's because
your parents are still together. They still make time for each other. They always prioritized themselves as much as they did you and your sisters, right? So they kept it all together. The problem is that there are a lot of parents these days who are spending more time ferrying their children to after school activities than they are actually keeping their marriage together. As a result, in the long term, the children don't benefit from that. They suffer from it. That's what that guy's saying.
And I totally just want to, I want to finish off with something, because, you know, my old lady and I talk about this more and more as I'm getting older, is that she always counsels people and says, often the problem isn't the children. You know, people say you have to cut the umbilical cord. Often people frame it as, oh, the children, he's stuck, he's always going home. The problem often isn't the child that needs to cut the umbilical cord. It's the parents with this very mentality of goo-goo gaga until. Let go. you prepared me. Let me go. And I love that article, Gareth. I must get that from you.
I'll read it again, because Claudia wasn't listening and neither were you, Mbulelo. So go to his website. It's called John Rosemond, JohnRosemond.com, and you can find it for yourself. This was published back in 2017. The title is Your Kids Should Not Be the Most Important in Your Family.
Love it.
Take a look.
Okay.
All right. That's all we got time for today, peeps. We will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. Have an excellent Tuesday and be good if you're not. Take photos. Cheers. CliffCentral.com.